Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and may your landing in Costa Rica this evening be safe and uneventful. Thank goodness we did not have a snowstorm this morning. How about you, Sarah Ellen?
Hi, Susan. So nice to hear your voice. No snowstorms here either. Clear
good,
weather.
Good.
Nice sunny
clear
stuff.
Weather.
Yeah.
Clear weather, no snow. So, wow, we did it. Justine and I finished the chronic pain with seven medicines. It's about 80 3 to 5 minute videos, and it covers a lot. And this weekend we went out to talk to people involved with cannabis.
Ooh, how fun.
Yes. Yes, it's such good pain release that I wanted to spend a little extra time on it. So there's a little bonus within the course of some nice interviews about using cannabis for pain relief. Meanwhile, I have found another butterfly. Now, she's a little bit young, but okay. She's a mere 87. and her name is Mary Ann Wakefield, and she made a 94-foot putt at the University of Mississippi at the halftime of their game. And the interviewer said, well, you must be quite some serious golfer. And she said, well, actually, I didn't know how to golf until after I retired. And then my husband taught me. And my game usually just fell apart when I got to the green. But I could hit the long shots pretty good. My son-in-law thought I was kidding when I said I wanted to try it. But I just signed up for it. Oh, and how did you hit the ball to the hole? Oh, I couldn't see the hole at all. I closed my eyes and said, Lord, it's up to you.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful.
Thank you, Mary Ann, for being a butterfly for us all. And also, from Reader's Digest, from a couple of years ago, Pucker Up, 13 Things You Probably Didn't Know About Kissing.
Mm.
When we kiss, we are actually kind of figuring out how healthy our partner is. 59% of men and 66% of women say they have ended things after a bad kiss.
For sure.
Fewer than half of the 168 cultures that have been studied engage in romantic kissing. However, chimpanzees and bonobos do it.
Hmm.
And bonobos even use their tongues.
Interesting. Wow, half. It surprises me. That's such a big number, half of 168. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it is very intimate, but and telling, I agree, definitely. But interesting. I would have lost if I had to guess that. I would not have gotten it in 3 tries.
Is it a kiss or an osculation? Is it necking or making out? Is it tonsil hockey?
Ooh.
When it comes to spelling out the sound of a kiss, most opt for N, M, W, A, H, Germans, however, say schmatz. Greeks say matzmutz. And the Japanese say chu.
Hmm.
A single kiss involves 30 facial muscles, and kissing burns 2 to 6 calories per minute. A very passionate kiss can burn 26 calories a minute. It will take 2 weeks of solid kissing to work off that box of Valentine's Day chocolates.
Oh, cute.
Let's see. There's a couple that lives in Thailand, and they canoodled for 58 hours, 35 minutes, and 58 seconds.
Mm.
However, they aren't the only ones who take smooching seriously. Thanks to philematology, the scientific study of kissing, we know that most people tilt their heads to the right when they kiss.
Hmm. That's curious, too.
Don't you remember wondering as a teenager, when we kiss, how do I know which way to turn my head?
Should have read Reader's Digest.
Should have.
Majority.
American films made between 1930 and 1968 were not to include excessive kissing.
Hmm.
Hitchcock got around this in his film Notorious by having Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman kiss repeatedly, but intermittently. Their lips never touched for longer than 3 seconds at a time.
Uh-huh.
love that.
Apparently there was some high-stakes kiss on Star Trek.
Oh, wow. I don't know about that one.
William Shatner and Nichelle Nichols playing Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura kissed in an episode of Star Trek in 1968, and the producers wanted to film a second version without the kiss in case some stations wouldn't air it. But Shatner and Nichols flubbed their lines, forcing them to use the original take.
Nice.
Any public display of affection can get you arrested in Dubai and frowned upon in China. Even the French outlawed smooching on train platforms to prevent amorous passengers from delaying trains.
Hmm.
King Henry VI of England banned kissing in 1439, hoping it would stop the spread of bubonic plague.
Hmm.
The kissing disease, mononucleosis, is only one of several conditions you can catch from a kiss. In most cases, swapping spit actually boosts your immunity. Smooching someone new, you're exchanging tens of billions of microbes. Long-term partners share a common microbe mix from all their years of kissing. And these protect us against infections and allergies.
Huh.
Isn't that cool? So listen up, Valentine's Day tomorrow, the day when you are allowed to celebrate kissing. So let's celebrate kissing, especially in the winter, as an immunity aid.
Love that. Mm-hmm.
Why does an X mean a kiss? It has to do with sealing with the kiss. When most people couldn't sign their own name, they would seal it with an X and then kiss it, so the X became the kiss.
Oh, wow. That's sweet. I did not know that. Wow. So how are you celebrating Valentine's tomorrow?
Well, I said to one of my favorite people, put your hands together and then open them. And you could do this too because you're one of my favorite people. So put your hands together, palm to palm, and then open them, and then start spreading them apart. And spread them apart as far as you can get them. Are your arms stretched way, 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 way out?
Way, way, way out.
That's how much I love you.
Aww, I love you that much back. That's so awesome. Thank you, Susan. Love you, too. Mwah.
Mwah. Mwah. M-W-A-H. Mwah.
That's right.
So what's up at your farm?
Oh, we have been really just basking in the nice weather. It is coming to an end, though. It started to cool off a little today, and we might get a tad of snow tonight, but it's just been so amazing. It feels like full-on spring. I mean, I'm seeing, like, the yellow in the willow trees. The goats keep taking turns going into heat and blowing coats. It's just been real interesting. So, yeah, just having fun playing outside.
Yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of maple syrup being made as we drove through central New York State through farmlands. Unfortunately, we saw a lot of abandoned barns. Of course, we saw the same thing in Italy when we were driving through the countryside in Italy. Many abandoned barns, the farm perhaps not abandoned, but the keeping of the animals.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, interesting to see. Because that New York State has always been a big dairy region. We passed a Kraft cheese factory.
Wow.
Yeah. There's no big road between where we live and where we were going to, so we really got to see a lot of small roads and small towns and countryside.
Sounds like a beautiful road trip.
Yeah, Justine says that it will take her a while because she's now, as I just said, headed back to Costa Rica. She'll need to settle in there and start uploading from there. It's slower to upload the videos there and then to get them in order, because even if we film them in order, and you know, we don't. Because I say, oh, I want to go back to this and add this, you know? So it takes her a while to upload them, and then takes her a while to get them in order.
Sounds like a big, big, undertaking.
So even though we have completed the course, that's just the front of the housework. The back of the housework still remains to be done, but we will let you know. And what else I did was I went to Happy Life, and I took Justine and a couple of other women, and I said, you have to help me find the shirt for the Red Clover Goddess. And we're kind of walking around in the store and looking at stuff, and one of the women, Lori, who was there, went up and said, where are just the plain shirts? And I said, oh, they're out there around the corner, da-da-da. And I'm holding the canvas of the Red Clover Goddess, and we walk over there, and the very first shirt that we see is the shirt for her.
Oh, what?
It's a radiant magenta heart.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, this is it. So I'm going to be ordering the shirts, and I'm going to be ordering a mix of shirts. The mediums and larges seem to sell the best, so I'm going to be ordering mostly those, and then a 1X as well, but I'm not going to order anything larger than 1X unless you tell me you want it. So I'm going to ask that in the next couple of days, if you want a 2X or a 3X or anything really big, you let me know and I will be able to order it. If you don't get it to me, probably it's going to take them a little while to do it, so I could probably add on to the order. I think I'm going to order 100 Red Clover shirts. So we had that to look forward to, as well as the Red Clover Conference. I am so excited by all of the things that we are going to be learning. We're going to be learning, of course, about medicinal uses, but also magical and metaphysical uses of Red Clover. And we're going to be learning about traditional uses and folkloric uses. And we're going to be learning how red clover relates to the soil and to insects and to animals, because her relationships to those parts of life really, I think, help us understand her. So I'm really thrilled that we have presenters that are going to be sharing that with us.
Me too. Oh, me too. Yeah.
And Nicole went out to talk to the shepherds, right?
I believe she did.
Nicole, who presented wool dyed with comfrey at the Comfrey Conference, and who presented wool dyed with hypericum at the Hypericum Conference, because red clover is not used much as a dye, although it does have tannins and will stain your clothing if you spill it, like black tea will. She thought it would be interesting to talk to the people who create the fiber about how red clover plays a part in that. So some, you know, old and familiar faces, Eagle Song, And David Hoffman, who always, you know, finds himself in places where people are laying down the law so he can tell us, you know, just what happened and how this came to be. And, of course, the theme of the conference is making sense of phytoestrogens. So we're really going to focus in on that. Brigitte Mars, the author of 23 books, including The Sexual Herbal, and what is it called? Ode to Nettle Love, something like that, a wonderful whole book about nettle, will be with us to talk about her experiences and what she knows about red clover. And on, it's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me first.
Yeah, so next up for me is to call all the presenters and do short interviews with them, because we always have really short, like 30-second pieces from the presenters at their page. So not, you don't just see a bio and read about what they're going to present and see a photograph of them. You push a little button, you get to hear their voice, because I think it's especially important to connect with people's voices and as well as their presentations. And then start, because you've already gotten a good start on it. Finish up setting up all the live Zooms for the conference. So we know who's going to be there, but we don't know in what order yet. But keep hanging out. And I know we haven't officially opened the gates on signing up, but there'll be some interesting changes and surprises when we do. And don't worry, you will have plenty of time to do everything you want to do and get to the Red Clover Conference.
Okay. Wow. I don't even know. Wow, I'm excited.
Well, we have a tarot reader to talk to tonight.
Yes, yeah.
And that is fascinating to me. I was trying to remember when I first heard of the tarot. Because one of the questions that she suggested that I ask her was, what do you do when someone says they're afraid of tarot? And that made me think, wow, have I ever actually met anyone who's afraid? Like, what was my first experience? I remember as a fairly young child, certainly going to school, so maybe 8 or 9, using a Ouija board. But I certainly don't remember anything about tarot at that time. Nonetheless, by the 70s, I was quite conversant with different tarot decks and different styles of working with the tarot, and knew the man who put out the, I think it's a 3-volume set now, the Encyclopedia of Tarot, and he included both my completed tarot deck, which I did with other people, the Amazon Tarot, and my uncompleted tarot deck, the Transparent Tarot, which I was doing by myself. So I went deep into tarot. So it will be really fascinating to hear what Teresa Reed, the tarot lady, tarot expert, astrologer, teacher, and author, who's been reading tarot for over 40 years, has to say to us. She's the author of The Cards You're Dealt, How to Deal When Life Gets Real, as well as a dozen other books. So she'll be with us at 9 o'clock. That's East Coast time. Stick with us till then, or come on back so you can hear what Teresa Reed has to say. Anything else you want to share with us, Sarah?
No, thanks. It's been pretty quiet here. Just been enjoying a nice early spring feeling here. That's all.
Oh, goody. I guess we should open it up for questions then.
All right. Well, I see two hands that are already up, and I'll remind everyone that if you have a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, all you need to do is press 1. That will allow us to see your hand go up, and we'll know you have a question. I'll announce your area code when it is your turn to be live. And with that, we will go to the first hand that has pressed 1, and you are calling from the 845 area code. From the 845, you are live with Susan.
Thank you, Sarah Ellen. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
And happy birthday, goddess of the red clover.
Goddess of the red clover. Hooray for trifolium. Somebody saw me walking with the red clover goddess and said, "Oh, what a pretty chrysanthemum."
Aww.
And I said, "She's trifolium. Look, she has 3 leaves." And they said, "Oh, so she does."
She also has a funnel, doesn't she?
I'm not sure what you mean by a funnel.
Oh, the floweret?
Floweret? Uh-huh.
Isn't it like kind of trumpet shaped, like you would need like a hummingbird beak to get in there or something? I mean, not really, because, you know, it spreads apart.
Clover flower. It looks like a small pea flower or a small bean flower. But
yes,
it's exactly,
and there's many flowerets. Like
pea or a bean flower.
Right, and there's a bunch of little flowers that make up the whole thing, right?
That's right. That's right. And in the red clover goddess, she has a robe made of the flower heads and a headdress made of the individual flowers. It's very pretty.
Oh, I bet that smells good, too. I had so much red clover until the drought a couple years ago, and because of my bad foot, I couldn't put any water out. So it all disappeared. But the little patches came back last year, and this year I expect it to be glorious.
Yay!
Isn't that funny how things just come and go?
Yes.
Yeah. So I called because you mentioned cannabinoids, and I know it's a great pain reliever, especially because of its anti-inflammatory properties. And I've been trying to understand this for a while, because there are other plants that have cannabinoids in them, like the daisy family, like the echinacea or echinacea, even things like cod liver oil, but aren't there 2 receptors, and one is for the spine and the other one is for I don't know what? But
so one of the things that I believe, and one of the things that I was talking to people about, was that thinking about THC and CBD and the cannabinoids as being the active ingredients might work if you want to make drugs. But in terms of pain relief and what's going on in your body, it's the terpenes.
Well, I believe that.
And
because they taste the best, they smell the best, and the feeling is obvious. You walking on
the terpenes
water.
Are different. The terpenes are different from strain to strain.
Yes.
And it depends on which particular terpene profile. I think of cannabis, whether it's cannabis sativa or cannabis indica, and there's not really that much difference. Whether it's high in CBD or high in THC, and there's not really that much difference. Whether it's hemp or for flower, and again, there's not really that much difference, although at the ends of the bell curve, of course, there's a huge difference. There, it's like cannabis is like a key that fits everyone's receptor in the endocannabinol system. But the terpenes, which are different if we extracted them, they would be essential oils, like humulene and limonene and carmenlene. There are just a lot of different terpenes. The exact terpene profile is like the piece of the key.
That's interesting that they all end with E.
So we'll always...
I-N-E, right?
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Azulene, the one in chamomile.
Huh. Well, I was just so curious
We learn, you know, about ourselves, which particular terpenes seem to work for us, it's easier for us to use cannabis wisely.
But are they tapping into our cannabinoid receptors, which I believe there are at least two, if not more? I mean, I don't know, but
there's at least two. A system, the endocannabinoid system. And what I'm saying is that the macro things, the cannabinoids, are a key that fits everyone's receptors.
Uh-huh, right, macro,
and terpenes individualize the key.
Oh, yeah, okay, so that's
it's
the difference, yeah.
It's sometimes known as the entourage effect.
That's probably why some people say, you know, I don't know if it's for me or... Because they're not getting the good stuff.
Exactly, and that was one of the things we were talking about, is that there are a lot of different varieties, and you are going to get very different effects from different varieties.
It's like getting a box of tea or a fresh
And that's also, I think, true of the herbs that relieve pain.
Yeah, me too.
Right? Is it going to be California
Pop? Old and stale.
Is it going to be hotep? Is it going to be filipendula? There are really different kind of, you know, ways that we relate to the pain-killing herbs, and they don't all work for everybody. Also, as we know, less is more, and what was fascinating to me was that very few of the growers smoke.
Really?
They rub it all over their bodies. They have special machines to get the terpenes into an inhalable form without the tars and the resins. They powder
it,
eat it. They do all kinds of things.
I see. Yeah.
It's very, very interesting, the ingenuity that comes into play in getting cannabis, because it is so easily uptaken by the body.
But what is your ultimate say on the anti-inflammatory properties? Is this one of the best or not?
As far as I'm concerned, the best anti-inflammatory is linden.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for saying that.
I think it's so tasty.
Huge fan
of linden, and it's so tasty.
It's so tasty. It's incredible.
Right, and it's so easy to harvest and to find.
It's one of my second favorite things after red clover that you've ever taught me.
Ah, yay, linden.
Flower power, Susan.
Flower power, you betcha.
Well, alrighty then, and I love you.
Thanks so much for calling to wish me a happy birthday. Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Green blessings.
All right, and I'll remind everyone, if you have a question this evening and would like to speak live with Susan, just press 1, and that will allow us to see a hand go up, and we'll know you've got a question. At this time, I see 2 hands that are raised. And the next is dialed in from the 603 area code. From the 603, you are live with Susan.
Thank you, Sarah Ellen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Happy
Valentine's Day. Hi, Susan. So you might remember my friend called in last week about the dog that has an injury, the left leg from running around and pulling something, and she needs surgery.
Yeah.
Do you recall that last week? Well, yeah. He's not here, but he asked me to call you because I'm going to be caring for the dog, and I found out that the dog is going in on Monday for the surgery. I thought it was like a couple weeks away. One moment, please. And anyway, was there anything else that he wanted to know, if there was anything else? He told me that you told him about the comfrey tincture.
Tincture. I specifically said infusion.
Oh, no, that's my bad. I'm sorry. Infusion, and to give it in goat's milk, right? Did I get that right?
You can, if the animal is reluctant to just drink the infusion, adding some milk of any kind will often encourage an animal to drink it.
Great.
I certainly did not specify goat's milk.
You said
I use goat's milk. How come I use goat's milk? Because I have dairy goats.
Well, is it true, Susan, that the goat's milk is more easily digested by humans and by animals than cow's milk?
If you can get fresh, raw goat's milk, but you can't.
Then there's no...
If you're keeping the goat yourself, then yes. But if you're not, it's probably not going to be, like, tastier fun. And I don't even understand why anybody would want to buy goat's milk unless they're buying it from somebody who's producing it. Like, I would never go to a store and buy goat's milk.
Yeah.
It's a store and I have to buy milk. I'm buying grass-fed organic milk from a cow.
Exactly. Now, years ago, I used to live in a different state, and when I brought up my children on goat's milk, and they have no allergies, but that was directly from a lady who raised goats.
Exactly. It was fresh, raw goat's milk. Right. But it's
right.
It's very difficult to get it to market.
Yeah, I just went to her house. She was
she
became a close friend, and it was wonderful. I haven't been able to research that yet. He's not too.
Some animals will just drink the comfrey infusion, and that's all you have to do. Others need to have some milk added to it.
Oh, so he should just try the comfrey infusion in an eyedropper.
How big is the dog?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that word.
How big is dog?
It's a Havanese, so I...
10 pounds, 20 pounds, 50 pounds, 100 pounds?
I would say under 20 pounds. Oh, gosh, I need to ask him.
Under 20 pounds. Okay, so possibly what I generally do is put some comfrey infusion down on the floor and let the animal drink it.
Okay.
This animal can do that, right?
Okay, so and if the dog will not drink that, then if he doesn't like it?
Then add some milk to it and see if the dog will drink it.
Okay, so those are, okay. I'll suggest that to him. And
When animals are so injured that they can't drink in the normal fashion, but it doesn't sound like that is what's going on in this case, does it?
Not at all. But I'll be caring for the dog. So now another question we both have, because I'll be caring for the dog. I thought he wasn't going into surgery for a couple weeks, but it's actually next Monday. Now, what is this comfrey good before and after? It won't interfere with the surgery at all? Those were his questions, and I don't know how to answer them, so I'm passing them on to you because I need to know too, because I'll be caring for the dog. Did I lose you?
No, I just never quite know how to answer this kind of question.
I don't know either.
And it's not because I don't know what the answer is. It's because it makes me want to scream.
Yes, no, just please tell me more, because
the fear and the paranoia in this kind of question are so really annoying to me.
Yeah.
So my friend James Duke, when asked this kind of question, would always say, compared to coffee, this plant is safer, as safe, or less safe.
Yeah. Well, he's the one he's the one who's scared. And I don't want to do any, you know what I mean? So I'm passing this on. He's really scared. He says, well, I don't know if it's going to.
That's what I just said. Fear and paranoia in that question make me want to scream.
I'm sorry. I know. I hear you.
That's why I was quiet, getting myself together so that I could talk to you in a reasonable, loving, kind tone of voice rather than.
Breath and tell me more that I can pass on to him, okay? Please.
Right. You know, this fear of plants, please tell him that I underwent 17 hours of surgery and drank comfrey leaf infusion immediately beforehand.
Okay.
I think that's probably the best answer, don't you?
Whatever you say. I needed your opinion because I was turning blue in the face trying to think of what to tell him.
What did you want to tell him? Why were you turning blue? You were holding your breath.
Well, I didn't know how to say it, you know, because he's just so scared that. Well, I don't know if it's going to hurt her. I said, well, call her back, and he says, well, I'm not going to be home on Tuesday, so you call her for me because, you know. But I basically told him that, and I said, I don't know of any harm that it would do, but if you have fear and you're afraid,
if you consider improvement in healing harm, then it will harm her. If you consider helping her get through the surgery harm, then it will harm her.
In other words,
we are talking about something beneficial. We are not talking about a drug.
Yeah, I guess he said, now I recall what he said. He said, well, what if it heals something that's not supposed to be healed until it's corrected by surgery? And I'm going, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Does that make any sense?
That's not how plants work. That's paranoia.
Okay.
What if he dies before she goes? I mean, what if the world turns into a big flower? What if you cannot live by what if?
Yeah. Oh, did he tell you that she's only walking on three legs? She can't walk, you know, put any weight on that left hind leg? And so
I'm not sure what difference that would make to me.
Okay, because he's not detail-oriented, and I didn't know if he told you everything.
I hope he didn't.
Okay.
It's not like I need to know anything. Comfrey is symphytum, which means to bring together.
Yes.
Comfrey draws bones back into their configuration. I told him.
Yes.
About my 21-year-old cat who was run over by a car and whose pelvis was broken into 20 pieces on X-ray. And that we fed her comfrey and milk and did Reiki with her. And that within 3 months she was jumping up on tables.
Okay.
This certainly does not sound like harm.
No. And what about after the surgery?
And in fact, it sounds like, and of course, it was suggested that she has surgery. But I knew that surgery was so traumatic. I mean, this is one of the things that is irritating to me about this kind of question. It's like, you're going to put your animal into surgery, which
yeah.
could kill your animal, and you're worried about free.
Yeah, now that was my question to you. I hope I didn't interrupt you. If he were to delay the surgery, is it possible Comfrey could heal without needing surgery?
Absolutely, definitely, without a doubt.
Really? So the surgery might be unnecessary.
So you know that I broke my wrist in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
I didn't actually know whether it was broken then because it was hours and hours and hours to an X-ray. So I treated it with Comfrey. I pulses it with Comfrey. And after about 3 months and I was home, I wanted to do physical therapy, and the physical therapist insisted I get an X-ray. And the person who took the X-ray said, well, you didn't break your wrist 3 months ago. You broke it 3 years ago. And I said, no, I didn't. So that's how fast the bone remodeling was. He said, and it's set a little crooked, so we're going to break it and screw it and plate it together for you.
Oh, my.
And I said, I will talk to the physical therapist about this.
Okay.
And he says, if you don't do this, you'll have arthritis. And I said to the physical therapist, I think if I let them do it, I will have arthritis. And she said, you're absolutely right. Half of the people that I'm treating here, I'm treating because they have plates and screws in their bones.
Okay. Okay.
So I have a fully functioning wrist which can support me in a handstand.
Wow.
And if I'd let them screw and plate my wrist together, I wouldn't be able to bend it and support myself on it.
Okay.
Is it picture perfect? No. Did Comfrey heal something faster than it should have? What a strange question.
Uh-huh. So I wonder how long it would take.
Working with the native intelligence of the body. The body knows how to do that. I may have also told him about Eagle Fong's son, who was in a motorcycle accident, smashed his ankle up. The doctor said, oh, your ankle really needs the, you know, screws and plates and wires, and we're just going to have to, like, do a lot to get this back together again. It's in, like, a dozen pieces. But it's too swollen now, so you go home, and 2 weeks we'll work on you. And he went home and drank Comfrey infusion and poulticed with Comfrey, and he came back in 2 weeks. And when he came out of surgery, they very sheepishly told him there was nothing they could do because all the bones were in their correct place.
In 2 weeks it healed?
Yes.
How often does one have to drink the Comfrey infusion to heal it so that they don't need surgery?
It needs to be what the animal is drinking. It's not a drug.
No, I mean...
it's not something you can take a little bit of, and it works for hours. You have to keep doing it.
So just offer him, have it out there all the time? No water, nothing else?
Correct.
Oh, wow. And he might not need surgery.
And in situ, like my cat was so injured that she couldn't stand up and drink. And so she would only weigh 2 or 3 pounds. And so we were giving her Comfrey and milk by eyedroppers because that's what we had to do because she couldn't manage it on her own.
Okay.
But Eagle's son certainly wasn't taking it by the eyedropper full.
Yeah. So drink as
neither
much
was
as
I. You know, I drank whatever the nourishing herbal infusion was of the day, and in addition to that quart of infusion, I drank between 1 and 2 cups of Comfrey infusion every day.
1 and 2 cups. So for a dog under 20 pounds.
So for a 20-pound, you know, pup, again, you can let the animal decide for itself. Put it out as a drink and let it drink.
Now, do I need to keep ice cubes in it to keep it cold so it doesn't go rampant?
Is it a really hot climate? Is it going to be boiling where the animal's water dish is?
No, we live in New England.
Direct sunlight? Is it on a hot place?
No, what I mean is I don't leave my infusions when I drink comfrey. I don't leave
them. I know
them
lots
out.
Of people who leave them out and get them room temperature because they don't like them cold.
Oh, okay. I thought because sometimes it would go bad. It would have an off flavor, so I didn't.
And how old was it when that happened?
Probably, oh gosh, a day or two?
Correct. So you want to change it every day.
Okay, okay. And so I can leave it out of the refrigerator for a whole 24 hours. Is that what I hear you saying?
I change it according to what you heard me saying. A whole bunch of questions, which you didn't answer at all.
I'm sorry.
I asked you if it was hot. I asked you if it was in the sun.
No.
I asked you a bunch of stuff that you just ignored.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the car and someone is driving me and it's a little noisy. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. In New England, and the house is probably not more than, 72 degrees?
So I don't understand why you're thinking it's going to rot.
Okay, so I can leave it out for a whole day.
You can leave it out for a reasonable amount of time in a cool place, not in direct sunlight.
Oh, no. It'll
use good sense. Use good sense.
It'll be in the kitchen.
Boil it. Don't put it on something hot. If it smells bad, switch it out like you would do with anything.
Okay. Now, is there anything else I could provide for the dog before or after surgery, before the comfrey, or is that all that you suggest?
Comfrey is an excellent thing. It will be very useful both before and after the surgery because it draws not just bones together, but skin and ligaments and tendons, and it will help the dog heal after the trauma of the surgery.
Yeah, and I did hear you say earlier that in 2 weeks it could heal to avoid the trauma of the surgery. I mean, to avoid the surgery, because the surgery itself can cause arthritis and all kinds of problems. That's what I heard you say earlier, correct? But if I can't tell him what I found out,
is what happened with Eagle Song's son.
Yep.
That he went back and they opened up his ankle and they said there was nothing we could do. We didn't need to do anything. The bones were all in the correct place. I did not say it was fully healed, did I?
Oh, no, the bones were in the correct place.
I said the bones were in the correct place. I said that my cat, who had her pelvis broken into 24 pieces, was able to jump up on a table after 3 months, yes?
Yes. So in this case,
that means that the bones had gone into their correct places, yes?
Yeah.
And obviously, if she was jumping, her pelvis must have been structurally sound. I said that when my wrist was x-rayed, they said the amount of bone remodeling made it look like it was a break that was 3 years old.
Because it had done so
because
much healing.
Because it healed that fast and that well.
It had healed it fast. Now,
really, really fast, right? 12 times faster than usual.
Wow.
So the thing to be afraid of is the surgery, not the comfrey. But people have their own belief systems.
Yep.
And it is very difficult to in any way change a person's belief by facts.
Yes. And I have my own belief system, which is different from his, but I can share. Because you have so much knowledge and experience with all these animals.
And so
and
you're
people.
Saying it's going to be a week from now. What would be reasonable is to say to this person, you know, in many instances, the bones can reestablish the correct pattern within a week or so. Has he been giving the dog comfrey since we talked last week?
No, he didn't have any, and I was all out, and we have it now, so I can give it to him now. But you know what? I realized
it's reasonable to suggest another X-ray before the surgery to see if the comfrey has helped.
Okay.
Now, I want again to remind you that in working with the cat, that energy work, Reiki, was also done.
Okay.
And that I, of course, used visualization, right?
Yes.
So it's herbs are not drugs. They are not just going to have...
Oh, I told them that.
We just, like, apply this herb and this is what's going to happen. No.
No.
Intention, magic, if you will, the unseen ingredient is important as well.
Yes. Now, exactly what he did to his leg, there's somebody here who knows, what exactly did he say that Angie actually did, that the vet say actually did to her leg?
I could make no sense at all of what you were saying.
Yeah, I was seven.
The CCL was severed. Does that mean anything to you, Susan? The CCL was severed.
I don't know what a CCL is.
What's a CCL?
In humans, it would be ACL.
In humans, it would be the ACL in the shoulder?
Uh-huh.
In the leg. In humans, it would be the ACL in the leg. And what did the vet say was...
Was this a mechanical injury? Or was it a traumatic injury? For instance, I was knocked into a set of stairs and the ligaments and tendons that supported my right shoulder were torn loose.
Yeah.
That's a traumatic injury. I reestablished full use of that shoulder using nothing more than comfrey, even though they wanted to reattach those things surgically.
Yeah, this is the major...
So if that's the kind of injury you're talking about, yes, comfrey can help reestablish that. If it has been mechanically severed, I don't know.
He wants to tell you more what the vet says. It was what? What did
I don't especially want to hear what the vet says. I want an answer to my question, please. Was it mechanical or traumatic?
It was severed completely. And
in what manner was it severed? Did someone take a knife to the dog?
No.
Did the dog run into a lawnmower?
No, it was... injury sustained.
So it was a traumatic injury.
While running around, Susan, is what he's saying.
That's what I'm saying. Comfrey will completely heal traumatic injuries even if ligaments and tendons have come unattached. I have complete and full use of my shoulder. They told me that if they did surgery, that I would have 85% use of my shoulder. I got much better results without the surgery. And I'm not alone. There's an entire Comfrey conference. Please, go watch the Comfrey conference and listen to person after person. Tell the kinds of stories that I'm telling you. There's nothing to be afraid of, and Comfrey puts things back together again. Give it a couple of weeks. Go back for another x-ray. See what it's looking like. Don't believe me. Believe the x-rays.
Okay. Susan, that was a question that I had for you. I attended the Comfrey conference, and you said we can go back anytime to listen to it because I signed up for it before it cost anything. But I forgot.
So you go to wisewomanschool.com and you log in, Carol.
I just go to the wisewomanschool.com
and log in.
And log in, and I don't remember
you
what my login.
You signed up for the Comfrey conference. You had to create an account, and you log into your account.
Okay, I'll see if I can.
And
do
all
that.
And all the courses that belong to you are in your account.
Okay, I'll have to do that. Well,
okay,
thank you, Susan, so much for all of your time. And
You're welcome. Comfrey truly is a miracle. And I don't blame modern medicine. They only know what they know. But we have so much better ways of dealing because we don't fix things. We heal things. It's really different.
Yeah, and this vet is only deals with medicine. He's never studied herbs. you know.
Exactly. So it's not that there's anything wrong with what he's saying. That works too. It just doesn't work as well as comfrey.
And it also is dangerous, you know, like you explained, you know, earlier. It's dangerous. There are so many risks and so many other problems that can result. But with comfrey, it, my understanding is it can heal completely with if you believe it, that it, you know, that it will work and maybe try other things. But surgery itself is dangerous. This, it's so much trauma to the body. Is it? Am I saying
actually,
it right?
Actually, there was a very famous study done with shoulder surgery in which people had agreed to be in this study, in which half of the people who went in for shoulder surgery, they actually wheeled them into the operating room, they put them out, they cut up on their shoulder, and then they sewed them back together again and did nothing else. And there was as much improvement in the placebo group as there was in the group that actually had operation.
Oh, my. Well, you know what?
Belief is what healing is all about. But if you think that you have to believe in herbs for them to work, you're wrong.
Okay, well,
comfrey is going to work whether you believe in it or not. The reason that I'm suggesting that he see or visit or watch the Comfrey Conference, especially the shorts, is to hear person after person talking about their experiences. There's a woman, notably, who talks about she was in an accident. She had her foot on the brake, and it just, you know, totally ripped her, shredded her ankle. And she refused surgery and healed her with comfrey.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
So long as there's not a mechanical, you know, metal object that severs a part of you, if it's a trauma like that accident, right, no matter how traumatic, comfrey seems to be able to go in there, straighten things out, pull it back together again, and make it strong and functional. In my personal experience, stronger and more functional than if I had let the doctors doodle around with me.
Yeah, so do I understand you correctly? Because she did this, whatever injury she did, which you understand better than I do, because I wasn't there.
He broke her ankle. I wasn't there either. It's at the
Comfrey Conference. A young puppy. She was running with a young puppy who she runs with all the time. But this dog... How old is that? 10 years? 10 and a half now? His dog
Let's not go over it again because other people have questions.
Okay, so thank you so much. And what
you,
what you called it was a trauma injury, not a mechanical injury. Did I get that right?
Right. Somebody didn't take a knife to her.
No,
she wasn't shredded by
a
machine.
Not at all.
It's a traumatic injury. It's been severed by an internal force, and that internal force can pull it back in.
Okay,
reconnect.
I got it. Thank you for explaining it so well and for your patience with me. Okay.
You're welcome, Carol. Love you. Bye. Green blessings.
Thank you. God bless you. Green blessings.
Green blessings. Good night.
Good night.
All right, and it looks like there are two callers that have pressed one to raise their hand. The next caller is dialed in from the 415 area code. From the 415, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. This is Heather.
Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Which Heather is it? Is it a Heather I know?
Yes. I was a live-out apprentice with you.
Okay. Good
remember
to hear.
Me?
I do. Good to hear from you.
Oh. Well, so nice to hear your voice. I mean, I listen to this your podcast quite often, but it's nice to talk to you person to person like this.
Yeah.
I'm calling because I harvested lots of burdock seeds, and I wanted to talk to you about how I could use them. So I know I want to make an oil. And I'm wondering, I just wanted to hear, like, how you've crushed the seeds before making the oil, because I think I need to do that, is to kind of break the seed before I pour the oil on it.
I have a collection of smashers.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a cast iron smasher.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like a big egg cup.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a smasher that fits right into it, and the bottom of the cup is ribbed and the bottom of the smasher is ribbed.
Mm, okay.
And it's got like a wooden thing on the top to help you hold it, and you can really smash up things with that. That's a little easier than a mortar and pestle, because seeds
mm-hmm.
tend to fly around.
Move around. Yeah.
Right? Mortar and pestle is a crusher, but it's a little hard with seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Easiest is my coffee mill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, my little electric coffee mill.
Yep.
Which I use to smash things up.
Okay.
And then I also have a variety of hand grinders.
Mm.
Once you
okay.
get into grinding things up, you get fascinated with all of the ways that humans have ground things up, because it's a common human thing to grind stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing the different coarsenesses and the different ways that
mm-hmm.
we've figured out to do that across cultures and times. So it's an excellent question.
Okay, thank you.
At a conference, I saw a very large mortar and pestle. Probably, the mortar probably held like a quart of material. I mean, it was big. And it had a big, heavy, like brass pestle in it. And it had a cover.
Mm.
The pestle was permanently inserted through the cover.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could grind up things like seeds and bark, because they didn't have electric coffee mills. All they had was apprentices.
So that was like a custom grinder.
Right.
That sounds interesting.
Yes. We were all in awe that it always gathered a little group of people going, oh, yes, oh, wow, wow.
Yeah, because I'd like to make quite a bit of the oil, and so the coffee grinder seems like efficient, probably the most.
It is certainly the one I reach for most.
Yeah, and I have used that to grind. I've used a coffee grinder before to grind like seeds and things, so
yeah.
I don't know why I hadn't remembered that. Okay. And then I want to ask you about eating burdock seeds. Do you have any experience? Like, I couldn't see anything about like eating them. Is there something about them that's just not pleasant to
eat? Well, if they're too bitter, you'll find that out right away, won't you?
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. And that's about the only reason I could think to not eat it, since every other part of the plant is edible. And.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what family burdock is in?
Asteraceae.
Okay. And it's in the thistle subgroup.
Okay.
And is there an herbal medicine that uses seeds in this group?
Well, when I was researching burdock, I saw milk thistle seed.
Milk thistle seed. There you go. And globe artichoke seed is also used. So these seeds from the thistle subgroup of the Asteraceae family are well known for their medicinal properties. And I think that it's true of all the seeds in this tribe, and that the reason that the milk thistle seed gets the press is that it's a big, big plant. I mean, I've seen leaves and milk thistles 3 feet long at the base. It's a huge plant. So it makes a lot of big, biggish seeds, which are fairly easy to harvest.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
We can't say that for burdock now, can we?
Yeah. No. No.
And the other thistles are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I let the thistles grow in my pasture. The goats actually like to eat them, but the ones that do get to flower, they always bring the cold finches. The finches love the thistle seeds.
Okay. Oh. Well, this, when I was doing my research, I have both. I didn't realize until I read this, I'm like, oh, yeah, that there's kind of like these two types of burdock, the one that grows really tall and then the more, like, one that's a bit shorter.
Those are the two primary. It's Arctium Lapa and Arctium Minus. But they're actually more differentiated by the clasping leaf on the Minus.
Hmm. Okay.
Because the Lapa, while it can get really big, in a really poor environment, will stay small.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
And
yeah, so
size,
these are all from like smaller plants. It was like a whole
size. Other things being equal, is not enough to differentiate species. That particular way that the leaf does or doesn't clasp the stem could be.
Okay, so maybe it's the same. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, these are shorter.
Do you have a Peterson's field guide? The Peterson's field guide has a little arrow pointing that particular feature, so you can look at burdock there, and you'll be able to see pretty clearly the difference.
Okay.
And medicinally, there's not considered to be that much difference. Again, the Lapa is the one that's usually used because it's bigger, easier to grow.
Okay. Okay.
But Minus is inferior despite its name. It's negative Minus name.
Okay.
All right, semi-precious stones. Do you suppose they wake up in the morning and go, well, I'm just semi-precious?
No, I don't think so.
She says, no, you are all precious, every single one of you. There's nothing semi about any of you. And we all laugh.
My last question was, if I don't use, if I'm not able to use all of them, could I freeze them and use them, like, at a later date, possibly?
That's a really great idea. You sure could.
Awesome. Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Well.
Because they will get buggy if you don't freeze.
Yeah. I read that in the book, so I was like, okay, well, what if I put them in the freezer, that will kill any of those.
That's right.
Bugs.
And then All right.
Okay.
Yay!
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Glad to hear from you.
Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. Green blessings.
Green blessings.
And it looks like we have two new hands that are up, and we've got about 17 minutes. So we'll go to the next caller in the 252 area code. In the 252, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. It's Jennifer. Nice to talk to you tonight.
Hi, Jen.
I'm going to go back to comfrey, if I could. On Friday morning, I fell off a ladder. And I landed, square straight on down on my left heel. And I immediately started putting comfrey oil on it and icing and doing all of those things. I did not visit a doctor because everything in my gut said that this was a tissue thing, and I didn't feel like, at least by 24 hours, I don't think I had a fracture of any kind. So I began doing a really intensive sprained ankle kind of protocol, and I just thought I'd chime in on the comfrey thing. Because I was going to talk to you tonight about, like, maybe the best way, am I missing anything, and should I be doing anything, and y'all just have addressed so much of what I had concern about. But the thing that was the discovery for me that I'd like your thoughts on and to share, you were talking about how much you should take and people thinking, like, how much should you take, and I was probably 2 days out before I could actually get together enough to cut the comfrey and make the infusion. I was using oil and ice, and it was working well, but I then started taking
Wait, cut the comfrey and make the infusion?
Yeah, I mean, I have dried comfrey hanging, and it was in the other room, and I couldn't get to the other room.
Had
I had to cut it.
I understand.
It.
You had the dried comfrey, and you had to cut it up.
Yes,
I,
yes. It was just awkward for me to try to get anywhere, even into the next room, because I was pretty
I got
I was pretty
I
angry.
Totally understand.
So 2 days out, I started actually on the infusion, and it was the magic. I mean, it was like, I don't even know how to describe it, because something completely changed in my healing process. I mean, completely changed in... It was the magic, and I had never really experienced, and then I had that kind of understanding of, oh, it's not how much, it's just about, and then I started thinking kind of allopathically, it's about keeping a certain amount of this in me in order to allow that healing to continue to happen, and I don't even know what really is happening, but it's happening.
It is, but it is happening, yes, right? Whatever's happening,
yeah.
It's happening.
Yep. And I, you know, I use it on animals, and it was, you know, interesting that you all were talking about animals, and I've used it for healing oral sores. It's really very effective, and in an olive oil infusion, and it the animals usually don't mind the taste of it. And I've seen it kind of, you know, what it's magic before, but I don't think I've ever really felt what happens with that magic before. And it's been a, I mean, like, I don't want to bust my ankle, but it's been an enjoyable experience in learning. It's really been something. So
I really you've seen it work for others, and now it's worked for you, and so you have the experience, and it's not just like something, some drug is being put on there. There's an actual inner feeling of healing that occurs.
Yeah. Oh, very directly, and it's not, you know, I use a lot of herbs. Comfrey is very specific in the way it seems to affect you.
Yes.
And people are terrified of it. I was at the Comfrey conference, and everybody I talked to, you know, does a huge pause. I'm the one that called in with the director at Extension that made us pull it out of a children's school because if they touched it, they were going to die. I mean, it, you know, people are crazy because this is so easy, grows almost everywhere with benign neglect, and it really goes across the spectrum of health. It cures and heals so much. But
comfrey, the comforting. Once you get past your fear, and once you let comfrey in and start using it, you never go back. It's like, wait a second. And I loved that the conference ended with Heather saying, without comfrey, I have no quality of life.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was
I
so stirring to me.
My husband is exactly like that. He is a 30-plus year survivor of brain cancer, and he had a lot of radiation. So he had cranial spinal radiation, and the muscles in his along his spine are just deteriorated. They had radiation, a lot of radiation. And so he's been using comfrey on his back. He can walk. And without it, he was going to be unable to walk, no doubt.
Yes.
So I've seen that level of impact with it. But the internal experience of the infusion and the healing was, can I ask one other question? I'm watching some of your stuff just to get myself back up to speed with the rebrew and was I doing it correctly. I saw reference to short-term memory and brain cell development. Can you speak to that? I don't remember hearing much of that at the conference.
There are amino acids, proteins, in comfrey that are critical in forming short-term memory. So by drinking comfrey, it's entirely possible that those proteins can improve short-term memory. Okay. I would say that my biggest concern about the surgery was that they were going to put me way out, and that can have consequences for your memory and your cognitive functioning. And that was kind of scary for me. And, in fact, they put me way out for 30 hours. And my memory is great. And I put at least part of that to my long-term use of comfrey.
Oh, interesting. Sure, you were really resilient, and you had so much of the building blocks in you.
Exactly. Exactly, because I had every reason to be totally addled after being completely put out for 30 hours. When I came to, they had me on, like, opioids dripping into my veins.
Yeah.
Right, which totally addles your brain. So, you know, and I certainly was hallucinating, and images were, you know, beings were appearing to me. It was really quite the time. And yet...
Yeah.
So, as you put it, and I agree with you, the resilience that I had built into my system. And I think last week I talked about Arlene, who is one of the healthiest lifestyle that I know of, who had a heart attack. And she, like, kind of caught it and went. And they said, ooh, good thing you came in or you'd be dead because there's really a massive heart attack you're in the middle of. And they kind of quelled that, and they put in a stent, and they discharged her from the hospital. They said, well, you're so healthy, we don't even really need to keep you.
Wow.
That's what we're building. We're not making ourselves bulletproof, you know. Still happens. Or as one of my apprentices made a bumper sticker that says, shift happens. With or without the F.
That is a much better description of it. That's good. Yeah.
Right, shift happens. So it's always going to happen to us, but when we're working with the nourishing herbal infusions, then we have the flexibility, and Comfrey is the queen of flexibility. She is what makes things strong enough to stretch.
Well, and I've been propagating it for the sheep, in the garden, the compost, it is very abundant, and it has applications throughout our lives. So I was just, I'm so familiar with it and was so shocked about how I could tangibly experience the change in my healing with the infusion. It really was amazing. Yeah. So with the dog, I mean, if she's still listening, I mean, there's just no reason not to continue to put that into there. One of the things that I do with the animals to get them to take it is to take wet food, whatever their wet food is, and slurry it a little bit with whatever I want them to take. And so that's a way to keep them going, gobbling down, but they're actually getting the medicine that you want in
there. Right. Because it doesn't have to be like a quart of Comfrey infusion. You could put like a quarter of a cup of Comfrey infusion into their wet food, and it would really...
And you do that three times a day. And...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I've also heard people say they mix it in with the dry food. They warm it and mix it in with the dry food, so they have like a warm, wet kibble.
I would think that would be a great way to get it into livestock. That might be a very good way to get it into livestock.
Actually, the best way to get it into livestock is feed them the herbs.
Do the, sure, yeah, of course.
Open the bag and say, would you like some Comfrey?
Yes, you're right. I'm thinking in terms of, doing in treatment.
They have lumens. They can really go for it.
Yes, they would love to eat. Well, and that's my primary expansion crop right now. I've put a little line of Comfrey all around their paddock.
Of course, the goats would easily be alcoholics, I think, if you left them. They love the tinctures. When they see you come in with a tincture bottle, they, like, start licking their lips.
Well, it was great to talk to you, and thank you for sharing all this information tonight. I think there was another caller. I don't know where we are on time. But,
I think so. So I bet I'll have a chance to talk to that last caller. Thank you. Dream blessings. Good night.
You too, Susan. Good night.
All right. And to that final hand that is raised in the 908 area code, in the 908, you are live with Susan.
Yes. Hi, Susan. It's Carol. Hi.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, good, good. Happy birthday.
Happy Valentine's Day. I love you.
I love you, too. Yes, coming tomorrow. Did you say in the beginning what special things you will do for tomorrow?
I don't know. Maybe I'll just lay around and eat chocolate.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, great.
What I'm going to do tomorrow is I'm going to go over to Justine's house, and I'm going to empty the refrigerator. I told them they didn't have to worry about dealing with the refrigerator or the trash, that I'll haul everything they don't want to waste because they're not back for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I always walk on Wednesday with a vet, so I'm definitely going to be doing that, and then usually have a yoga practice on Wednesday. Oh, and first thing tomorrow morning, I have a Zoom session with the Correspondence Course and Mentored students.
Oh, busy day.
So that's going to be a fun day. And then, as I mentioned, Justine and I finished a new course, and I have to go, while it's still fresh in my memory, to the outline and add things that I added to the course while we were filming to the outline. So she has something to follow to put it in order. And she also said, I would like this and this from you. And I promised people an updated list of anti-inflammatory foods and herbs. So I'll be working on that as well tomorrow. So a few things to keep me busy. And, of course, I like you, I do my best to love people every day. One of the things that Justine's been doing while she's here is going to visit the mother of one of my granddaughter's friends.
Oh.
And that woman had two daughters, one of whom was friends with my granddaughter, and another, also teenage daughter. And the other daughter was hit and killed on the road. It was hit and run. We have no idea who did it.
Oh, no.
And she's just like totally, of course, totally freaking out. Who wouldn't?
Yes.
And, we look at each other and we say, if you love somebody, tell them you love them. Do not wait for a day, one day out of the year to do it. Tell them all the time. Tell them every day because one knows what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Share the love. Be the love. Spread the love.
Yes. Oh, beautiful, beautiful message, Susan. That anti-inflammatory food list, is it something that you would put on your website or was that just for some specific
it's going
purpose.
To be part of the chronic pain relief through the seven medicines course. Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
I think it's probably at the mentored site because I've been working on it for a while. I started working on it when I was doing radiation because I wanted the list for myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. There's certainly in Abundantly Well, there's quite a few things that, if they're not the list of anti-inflammatory foods, there's a lot of things in that direction under radiation and so on.
Okay, very good. I can check that. And then in your COVID materials, you have two different, post-COVID, you have two different, one is a free talk and the other is that a paid one, a COVID, long COVID course, like?
What's your question?
Yeah, the question is, I thought that you said you had two COVID, lectures on the website.
There's a COVID course that Justine and I created early in 2020, probably February of 2020, and it's free.
Okay. I'm thinking
right?
of... Post-
and so that's, you can find it by the date or you can just look for it. And then last year, during our February work session, we created a course on post-viral syndrome.
Yes.
And if you've had COVID, that post-viral syndrome is known as long COVID. And the thing that, if you're not experiencing it, can be kind of confusing is that it sounds like it's just COVID that goes on and on, but in fact it's not. It's post-viral mm-hmm. syndrome. And it's not so much in your lungs, it's more of a nervous system and cardiovascular system problem.
Right.
So that's why it was necessary to have a different course for the post-viral syndrome because it's a whole other way that we have to think about it and deal with it, and I put it in the perspective of the other post-viral syndromes that we know about.
Okay.
So it's not just long COVID. If you have, like, some people have post-viral syndrome after they've had mononucleosis.
Oh, yes.
It's sometimes known as chronic fatigue.
Yes.
So it's, it's something that's been known about, and we're hoping to give a broad enough spectrum of information for everybody to be able to choose the things that are really going to work for them. We have, what, about 30 more seconds to talk.
Okay. Very good, Susan. Thank you so much. And how do you access that post-viral syndrome course?
Post-viral syndrome. You got it.
Just type it into SusanLead.com.
You can, or you can go, as I said, to WiseWomanSchool.com.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. God, love you.
Love you. Happy Valentine's Day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye to Carol, and welcome to Teresa. Teresa Reed, also known as the Tarot Lady, is a tarot expert, an astrologer, a teacher, and the author of a dozen books, including The Cards You're Dealt, How to Deal When Life Gets Real. Teresa Reed has been reading tarot for over 40 years. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Hey, Susan, thank you so much for inviting me.
So I was very triggered in wonderful ways by your questions, because I asked myself those questions. I said, well, Susan, when did you discover tarot? And I couldn't remember any, like, it kind of crept up on me. How did you discover tarot?
Well, I discovered it when I like to say it happened by accident, but, you know, there's no such things as accidents when it comes to things like finding your life path. I was a curious teenager, and back in the day, trying to figure out who am I, and I happened to have the good fortune of having a friend whose mother was an astrologer, which was really unusual because we lived in a rural area, and she did my astrology chart. And I was, like, totally fascinated by what she told me. And so we were at a bookstore in the mall on one of those very rare trips when we got out that way. And I went right, of course, to the metaphysical section trying to find astrology books, and I saw a tarot deck. And I just picked it up on a whim. You know, I'd seen it on television, and I thought, oh, this looks cool. And so I took it home and opened that box, and I was just fascinated, and that was over 40 years ago, and I've had a deck in my hands ever since. I just fell madly in love with it.
And what was your first deck?
Oh, the first deck was Marseille's deck, because that was the only deck that was available in the store, and that, by the way, that is a hard deck with. So that was all that was there.
Yes, that's not like a really intuitive, obvious deck.
Oh, God, no. God, it was terribly hard. But, you know, I was so determined, and I'm stubborn as can be, and I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. And then I think it was a couple months later.
That must have been so wonderful for you, because it really made you have to enter into the cards.
Yes, you had to work. You had to do the work. You had to really want to learn. And, you know, back then, we didn't have the Internet. So, I mean, anything around that, the information was hard to come by, especially living in the area I did. It was a couple months later when I happened to be in that bookstore again, and I saw a Rider-Waite-Smith deck, and I grabbed that. And, of course, that's an easier deck to work with, because it's
love you.
Yeah, so visual. So then it was a lot easier, but I already had my background in the Marseilles.
So for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we believe that tarot pretty much started out like what you would consider playing cards. And meanings were attached to the cards. Like you might say, oh, the Queen of Spades or the Ace of Hearts. And then Pamela Coleman Smith really switched things around. And she drew the meanings on the cards.
Yeah, and that made it much easier for people who are visually oriented to interpret them. And, you know, she added so much life and flavor in the images. And I am a very visual person. So for me, I mean, the Marseilles really works my analytical side, but that, when I had the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, I was like, this is it. This is so beautiful to look at. And there's so much in those images too. And some of them look simple, but when you look in there, you can see things you might not even notice, even though you've been looking at the deck forever and ever like I have. I still see new things in them. They're just incredible.
I believe that Pamela was a member of the Order of the Golden Dawn.
Yep.
Which was a group of people devoted to exploring esoteric things.
Yes,
so
the Golden Dawn had a big bag of
symbols at her disposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And it was like she opened Pandora's box on the tarot.
She did, because, you know, like you mentioned, it started out like playing cards. It was a game. In fact, tarot still played as a game in many parts of the world. And it wasn't until, you know, Jean-Baptiste Olliette wrote a book on the divination aspect of tarot that it became associated with that in the 1700s. And that made it more popular. But when Pamela Coleman Smith and Waite put out that deck in 1909, that's when it really got popular and became more associated with divination.
So what do you think? Can you, like, read things from tarot?
I think so. I think tarot is a tool. I really do. I look at it as a tool, kind of like those ink blots. When you look at them, there are universal symbols, and you don't even have to be a tarot reader to understand some of those symbols. A child can look at them like a picture book, and they might see an image of the Five of Wands and see, oh, it looks like people are fighting or they're playing a game. So they have all these universal symbols that portray our day-to-day life and our spiritual life. And what a tarot reader does is we lay them out, and we look at them pretty much like a picture book, and then try to intuit, what story are these cards trying to tell me about this situation, and where does it look like the story is going? And from that point, we can determine where things are headed. But even when we see where things are headed, it doesn't mean it's set in stone. We always have agency, and we can make different choices if we don't like the way the story is unfolding.
I like that a lot. The other thing that I really like about tarot reading is that while you can certainly read tarot for yourself, ideally, I think it is an exchange between two people, and there's a very great intimacy in it because it's a situation in which there's a deeper level of honesty given and expected.
Yes, I agree. I like to say it's like a two-way street. Tarot isn't just me sitting around telling you this is what it says. You know, every time someone comes for a reading, they're looking for information, and they're also looking for a safe space to be witnessed. So there's a lot of back and forth dialogue, and I think the cards are actually, by the way, wonderful for opening up dialogues, too. If you have trouble speaking about a topic, take out those tarot cards. You're going to start talking.
Mm-hmm. And especially because, as you say, the images are purposely ambiguous. Are they playing? Are they fighting?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only in the context of the other cards that they're there. And to meet and to really understand people that, at least in my experience, that maybe I ordinarily wouldn't have, if you're walking around with a deck of tarot cards. Like Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said, what do you do with those tarot cards? And I said, I read them. And she said, good, do a reading for me. I'm like, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
yeah, I think.
You know, like, wow, okay. Like, I wouldn't have had that. I wouldn't have had that intimate exchange with her if it hadn't been for the tarot cards, which give us a reason, give us an excuse, as it were.
They're instant conversation makers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you use the same deck all the time, or do you switch around?
So, I have too many tarot decks. Like most people.
You cannot have too many tarot bags. Is he possible?
Oh, my God. I mean.
They have too many baskets.
Yeah, so they're kind of exploding around here. There's, you know, for myself, I always have, when I used to read for the public, I don't read for the public anymore, I just write books, but I always would use a Rider-Waite-Smith deck, and, you know, or a Rider-Waite-Smith clone, like the Wiser Tarot is a deck that I love. That's what I would consider a workhorse deck, is a Rider-Waite-Smith deck. And the reason why I would use that when I read with the public is because most of the public, when they think of tarot, they think of that deck, and so they, yes, so that is like, it's easy. But when it comes for myself, you know, I have other decks that I like to use. My absolute favorite deck will always be the Baroque Bohemian Cats Tarot. That's my deck. No one gets to touch it. No one gets a reading from it. It's my deck. And then there's sometimes where I just feel like, you know, I'm sick of looking at this Rider-Waite-Smith deck. Maybe I need something different. Maybe I need to grab this, you know, Connolly Tarot, or maybe I want to look at a Marseilles Tarot, or maybe I want this newfangled deck, the Abstract Futures Tarot. So I'll switch off every so often. But in general, if I'm going to be reading for somebody else, it's always going to be a Rider-Waite-Smith clone, always.
I think this is partly because any system of divination that we're going to use over and over again depends actually on minute differences.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pick those minute differences up more easily if we use the same deck. We're not so distracted by the fancy stuff is fun. And yeah, you know, they certainly, you know, like even in the past 50 years, the proliferation of tarot decks has been phenomenal, partly because it is handy. People like the card thing. So we're talking about intuition. Do you think intuition has a role in tarot?
Absolutely. I think it has a role in tarot, and I think it has a role in astrology, too, because tarot has a structure. And, you know, it's got 78 cards. It's got the majors, the minors. It's got the courts, all of that stuff. So there's a structure. And understanding the structure of the tarot is really important to being a good reader. However, much like the structure in a house, the structure is where, you know, things are built on. This is the solid foundation. But the intuition is like the interior design. The intuition is what makes it beautiful, what tells the story, what feels out how things go together. So, for example, if you and I had the exact same cards, we have the exact same questions, we're still going to get a different reading because the job of the reader is to really feel out how does the story go together for this person, and that really does require trusting your instincts.
Somebody once said to me, there are only two stories. You leave home, stranger comes to town.
I love that.
So, yeah. There's so many ways to talk about intuition.
Intuition's really, really important, and so many of us deny our intuition. We think we're being weird, and it's like, well, wait a minute, if I'm feeling something, I probably should pay attention to this. There's probably a good reason for it.
What I have heard from many people is that it's difficult for them to distinguish between free-floating paranoia, chronic anxiety, and intuition. And so we once asked Jean Houston, hey, Jean, what's the difference between a shaman and a schizophrenic?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, that's very easy. She said, both of them see visions, and both of them are not totally in this world, but the shaman will always offer ways to create greater wholeness, and the schizophrenic will break things apart.
Oh, interesting. I think the thing with intuition is that, you know, again, we get these feelings, we get these insights, and I know that for me with intuition, it's not coming from a place of anxiety. It always comes from more of a place of gentle knowing. Now, that doesn't mean that fear-based intuition isn't real. There's a book by Gavin DeBecker called The Gift of Fear, which I recommend to everybody. And in that book, he talks about how sometimes we get these really funky feelings about people that we know something's really wrong with them, but then we want to be nice, and then we put ourselves in harm's way. So, you know, oftentimes, again, for me, intuition is just kind of like I got that feeling about something. But I've had occasions where I've had a really creepy feeling, and it's turned out to be true, and it saved me from danger. So, you know, fear can sometimes be intuitive. And there's a difference between fear-based intuition and just plain straight-up fear and anxiety. It's a very different feeling. When I'm feeling anxious about something, my intuition goes right down the toilet.
That's pretty much the answer I give, too. I say, well, really, you can't be confused because they're really exclusive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Me, to be intuitive, I need safety, at least an interior sense of safety, and that safety allows me to be more relaxed and more open to nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And anxiety does just the opposite.
Yeah, when I'm anxious, I'm going to overanalyze everything. I'm going to overanalyze, and now I'm in a very different headspace than when I'm sitting and just allowing an information to flow into me. That's a very, very different kettle of fish.
Yeah. So I think it's only thinking about it that we can really confuse them as actual, you know, physical, emotional, mental states that are pretty clearly different once we've experienced that calm sense of intuition, which even if it's get out of here now, is still from a calm place.
Yes. Absolutely. That is 100% true. I've known, like I said, whenever I've been in situations that have not been good for me, it's always just that feeling like, you know what, you need to get out of here, or this person is not safe. And if I just listen to it, I always find that it works. It works. Intuition wants to protect you. It's just like when you see two dogs walking down the street. The dog will instinctively know if the other one's friendly or not, and you'll see it when you'll see them maybe sniff each other, or maybe the one the hair starts standing up on the back of the neck. That's intuition. Intuition is an animal instinct that we all have, and it will protect you. It will guide you. It can help you.
I also think that many people say that they aren't in touch with their intuition for the very obvious reason that they're not willing to listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because their intuition is saying to them, this job is killing you. You need to leave
yeah.
the relationship, right? And there can be other considerations that make it hard to hear that.
Yeah, and often those that could be because, you know, they don't want to let someone down, or that maybe they're afraid if they leave that job or that relationship. The unknown is really scary, so oftentimes people will ignore that. They'll ignore their intuition, and they'll stay in situations far longer than they should to their detriment.
Well, let's not go too much further before you tell people how they can find you if they want to connect with your books or a reading, or tell us what else we could find when we connect with you.
Thank you, Susan.
Let me correct there. I think you said you're not doing readings anymore, but I was not totally clear about that.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't read for the public any longer, but I always tell people, listen, if I'm ever going to open up the books again, You could just sign up for my free newsletter, and then I'll let you know. But right now I'm retired. I've been retired from doing tarot readings for a couple of years because I'm writing books. And I've written a lot of books in the last couple of years, and I'm doing a lot of teaching. And, you know, they can find everything over at my website, thetarotlady.com. That'll show you access to the live classes I teach. I have a Patreon account where I do regular classes and card of the day interpretations. You know, I have a lot going on my website, a database of tarot card meetings, and monthly astrology, free astrology and horoscopes. And you can find all the information about all the current books on my website there. So everything's at that hub. That is always the best way to connect. And that's where, you know, people, again, can sign up for the free newsletter. And that's the best way to stay in touch and to find out about what books are coming up, what classes are coming up. And, again, if I ever open up the books again, which is kind of doubtful, but you never know, that's going to be the way people will know.
Yes, it's interesting. I said to my tarot mentor, Zsuzsanna Budapest, at one point, I said, you know, I find that I keep putting off the tarot readings I promised. And she said, you must quit now.
Ah, yeah.
And I did. And you're right. I have not done a reading for anyone since I put it down.
How long has that been?
It's very interesting to see that, you know, that reluctance in me. And that's part of the intuition, too, isn't it?
Yep.
Your intuition was
telling you.
My intuition was saying, don't do it now. Do it another day. And fortunately, you know, I was mentored not to harass myself, but to go with it. So listen to that. So your latest book is The Cards You're Dealt. Had a deal when life gets real, like the title. Tell us about it.
Thank you. First of all, the title, my son gets credit for that. My son is very clever, and he came up with it. I'm like, oh, my God, it's perfect. It's a book about how to read tarot for really heavy situations, like grief and loss and, you know, divorce, because I think a lot of people have a misconception that tarot reading is all about, you know, will I find the one? And it's like, you know, actually when people come to a tarot reader, a lot of times they're trying to unpack some really heavy things and it's the only safe place to go. So I wanted to write that book to give people information so they could see how tarot could help them, but also to offer tips for professionals so they don't inadvertently cause harm when they're doing readings when people are coming with these serious topics.
Tell us a little more about that. How could harm be caused?
Well, harm can be caused, for example, sometimes, you know, people will want to talk about grief. And one of the things that happens is, not just tarot readers, but in general, we get very uncomfortable talking about that. Nobody wants to talk about grief. It's not a sexy topic. And so what we'll do sometimes is we'll say something like, well, everything happens for a reason. And that does not help the person who's sitting at your tarot table, or if you're using that with a friend or loved one, it doesn't help them. What that does is it creates an ending to the conversation. We cannot go deeper to really work out what we're feeling. And so that's one of the ways we can cause harm in a reading, by just cutting it off when we get uncomfortable. Or if we say, you know, let's move on. And I've been to readers who do that, where you can tell they're getting uncomfortable with something that I need to talk about, and they want to dismiss it. They want to move past it. They want to get to, you know, something else that feels safe for them. And we want to really make sure that the tarot table is a safe space for people, that they don't feel dismissed or like shedding tears or anything is a bad thing. It's all a natural part of life.
Which means we must work on ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
We must be able to be not just comforting, but comfortable around pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it just means witnessing people as they are and not judging it. And that is such an important thing. I always like to think of the tarot table as a very safe and sacred place. I mean, over the years when I read for the public, people would come to me with all kinds of stuff. I mean, things you would not think. Sometimes I've even telling anybody, but they felt really safe. And it's like, yeah, this is a place you're not going to be judged. Let's just work with this. Let's help you. Let's look at how we can move through this in the best way possible. So I love using tarot in that way. It's not just for divination. It's also really a great place for working on complex emotional things.
Yes, I absolutely agree. For me, tarot was always a way into the soma, into the somatic experience of being embodied.
Mm. Mm-hmm,
Which is not just physical and not just emotional and not just spiritual, but a strange kind of amalgam of all of those things at once. And tarot really mm-hmm. does that. It's like a visual image that causes an emotional reaction that is connected to symbols that are soul symbols around the globe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I'm also a big-time journaler, and one of the things I've loved using tarot for in my own practice is pulling a card and just journaling about it, journaling about what I'm feeling, what I feel about the card, what's going on with my life, all of that. And it's amazing. It really helps me to sort out a lot of how I'm feeling. And later on, I'll go back and read those journals, and I'm just amazed, first of all, at tarot's ability to stir those insights and to help me process things. I think journaling is a wonderful, wonderful thing, and tarot can be a great tool for that. And I talk about that in the book, by the way.
All right, the cards you're dealt. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I loved this particular question. What's your advice to people who feel scared of the tarot?
I always tell people they are only 78 paper cards. There's nothing scary about tarot. They're a tool, and like any tool, it all depends on the intention of the user. So if you are using them to help yourself and for good, you're going to be just fine. But if you're taking like a hammer can be used to hang up a beautiful picture, it can be used to like damage that wall. Like anything, you can use it for something negative, but on its own, it's very, very neutral, and it can help you. Just use it wisely.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think the scare is that it is part of the list of things that certain, and I think of them as Christian, people think are evil. That somehow the tarot is backward religion, that it's a devil religion rather than God religion. But what mm-hmm. you're saying, when you say neutral, I believe, is it's not a religion at all.
No.
And that's why I say they're soul symbols. They're not religious symbols in the tarot. They're soul symbols. They are from the collective
yeah.
unconscious. They're things that will remind you of your connection to truth and beauty and the reality of life, which is the cards you're dealt. And it's great to have plans, but that isn't necessarily what you're going to, okay, well, now they're going to deal me a winning hand. Well, you don't necessarily get the winning hand.
Exactly. But we can do something with that hand, maybe.
Absolutely.
We can do something with that hand. And there's nothing, that's not scary at all. Knowing that you have a choice is actually empowering. So there's nothing scary about tarot. It's actually a way to empower you.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's really wonderful to leave with people. And we have come to that time where I'm going to ask you, what do you want to leave in the hearts and the minds of everyone who's been listening to you tonight, Teresa Reed?
Oh, is that a question for me then? What do I want
to
leave?
That is a question for you. What do you want to leave in the hearts and the minds of everyone who's been listening?
Oh, what a beautiful question. So what I would like people to know is that you've got this, and no matter where you are at this stage in your life, you can always, always turn things around. It's never too late.
I believe that we are engaged in reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. And I want to thank you for not just helping with the weaving itself, but it's as though you have come to decorate this weaving so that there are signs and symbols in it now that weren't there before. We are all reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients and wrapping it around ourselves. And Sarah Ellen, my love to you on Valentine's Day and every day for helping me in so many ways to put herbal medicine right back where it belongs as people's medicine. It's the medicine that's right outside your door. Green blessings, everybody. Good night.
Love you, Susan.